Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Madhava Radha Madhava Radha Jaya Radha Madhava Radha Madhava Radha Jaya Narsingha Dev, Jaya Narsingha Dev, Narsingha Dev, Jaya Narsingha Dev. Jaya Prahlad Maharaj, Jaya Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Jaya Prahlad Maharaj. Nityai Gaura Haribo, 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 Gaura Haribo. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Paravikachacharya Astatara Shri Shriman His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Paravikachacharya Astatara Shata Shri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koite Vaishnavinda Ki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki, Mathura Dham Ki, Navadweep Mayapur Dham Ki, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki, Ganga Mayi Ki, Chamuna Mayi Ki, Tulasi Devi Ki, Bhakti Devi Ki. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We are reading today from chapter, canto 8, chapter 15. Bali Maharaj conquers the heavenly planets. We're going to be reading verses 35 and 36. So I'll begin with chanting verse 35 and translating, and then we'll go to verse 36. Tatasta anubhavena bhuvana traya vishrutam kirtim dikshu vitanvana sareja udaradiva. When Bali Maharaj performed these sacrifices, he gained a great reputation in all directions throughout the three worlds. Thus he shone in his position like the brilliant moon in the sky. Text 36. Bubuje cha shriyam sridam dvija devopalambitam krita krityam ivatmanam manyamano mahamana bhubujescha shriyasridham dvija devo palambitam krita krityam ivatmanam manyamano mahamana. Bhubujecha shriyam sridham dvija devo palambitam krita krityam ivatmanam manyamano mahamanam. Prabhus Bhubuje cha shriyam sridham dvija devo palambitam krita krityam ivatmanam yamano mahamanaha. God sisters, bhubujay, enjoyed. Cha, also. Shriyam, opulence. Suridam, prosperity. Dvija, of the brahmanas. Deva, as good as the demigods. Upalambitam, achieved because of the favor. Krita krityam, very satisfied by his activities. Eva, like that. Atmanam, himself. Manya mana, thinking. Mahamana, the great-minded. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because of the favor of the brahmanas, the great soul, Bali Maharaj, thinking himself very satisfied, became very opulent and prosperous, and began to enjoy the kingdom. The purport by His Divine Grace. The brahmanas are called dvija deva, And Kshatriyas are generally called Naradeva. The word Deva actually refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Brahmanas guide human society in becoming happy by satisfying Lord Vishnu. And according to their advice, the Kshatriyas, who are called Naradeva, keep law and order so that other people, namely the Vaishyas and Sudras, may properly follow regulative principles. In this way, people are gradually elevated to Krishna consciousness. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets. Om Agyanati Marandasya Ganagana Salakaya Chakshurun Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gora Bhaktavindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master is opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Before beginning the class, I'd just like to share with you these two verses that you can't see. But they're wonderful because they remind us of how fortunate we are today. One is from Srimad Bhagavatam 1340. This Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people. And it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. The next verse, 1343. This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. So we're very, very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada has given us Srimad Bhagavatam. And these two verses that we have just read today, they mark the end of this chapter. Next, we will be reading about the appearance of Lord Vamanadeva before, of course, hearing about Bali Maharaj again. This Bali Maharaj, he's quite a complex personality. He doesn't really walk, you know, the straight and narrow. As, for example, his grandfather Prahlad did. Prahlad's complete total and only focus was Krishna, no matter what happened. Complex, of course, means that due to his material desires, he was entangled in many dramatic ways in the material energy. He was even the leader of the demons. Actually, it's for this reason that I'm attracted to this story. I'm actually attracted to many stories where the protagonist, I think the name is a devotee entangled in material complexities, because That's my condition. So I'm always hoping that I'm going to get a little bit wiser. So here we have a devotee who would sometimes get overwhelmed by his material desires, his opulences. He was even in the interesting position of being a leader of the demons. Bhishmadev, that great Mahajan, was fighting against Krishna and Arjuna, as were many other great souls. This is the nature of the material world, full of duality and deep pits. Still, Krishna knows the heart of every living being and knows how to extricate the soul from the complexities of material entanglement. So we, who are imperfect devotees, and sometimes overwhelmed by our own material entanglements, we should take great hope from the life of Bali Maharaj. In the past few weeks, maybe even months, because there was an interim period, we have been reading individual verses and purports daily, but a quick review of the life of Bali Maharaj will allow us to appreciate him and what we can learn from his life. He was the king of the demons, but he was wise enough to know when to make peace and when to fight. And so he forbade his commanders to kill the demigods coming toward them in a non-combative move. He actually accepted the proposal given by Lord Vishnu and even agreed to work with the demigods and produce the nectar. I'm sure some of the demons were scratching their heads and wondering, why is he cooperating with Lord Vishnu? Then, his demon associates, bewildered by the beauty of Mohini Murti, agreed to let the demigods drink the nectar first. In the battle that ensued, there is an effulgent description of Bali Maharaj. For that battle, the most celebrated commander-in-chief, Maharaj Bali, the son of Virochana, was seated on a wonderful airplane named Vaihayasa. Indeed, it was sometimes visible and sometimes not. Seated in this airplane under a beautiful protective umbrella and being fanned by the best of the chamaras, Maharaj Bali, surrounded by his captains and commanders, appeared just like the moon rising in the evening, illuminating all directions. I couldn't help but think of, when I get on an airplane and go back to Canada, it's nothing like this. We're cooped up in this tiny, small area, but Maharaj Bali, the demigods, they had airplanes. He was not equipoised. He became angry because of Indra's military expertise. And he was so expert that he was able to disappear and create demoniac illusions that did the attacking for him. On the battlefield, before Indra was preparing to attack, he actually chastised Indra because he said to him, "You think you're the cause of attaining fame and victory." So he even had spiritual realization. In a precarious condition after the attack, he regained his senses by the grace and memory of Sukracharya. Actually, he died, but Sukracharya brought him back to life. It's a pretty amazing life. Bali Maharaj served Sukracharya so faithfully, and he got so many blessings, even from his grandfather Prahlad. Then Bali Maharaj went to the abode of Indra. Indra understood now that Bali Maharaj's power was very great because he had the blessing of his guru. And in this most recent adventure, which we're finishing now, he's so victorious that all the demigods just walked out of Indraprastha and let him take over. The whole beautiful city of Indra with all of its opulences. But then his roller coaster ride continues. He surrenders the universe to the Supreme Lord, and when Lord Vamadadeva takes such big steps that there's nothing left for the third step, he gets arrested. Finally, he surrenders his life. But the best is yet to come, so we have to keep reading. Actually, he did it. He surrendered himself completely. So Bali Maharaj's life was actually perfect. Actually, reminds me of a personal experience. In 2015, my husband and I were away from Krishna consciousness for a period of time, and we came back, and my husband resumed his service in New Vrindavan. And then one time, I hadn't completely moved there yet, so he came back to Canada, and on his way back, he was stopped by the barking dogs at the border and was not allowed in. In fact, he was kicked out for the next 5 years. So here we were thinking, we finally got it together, we're surrendering to Krishna. And then, whap, we get slammed around a little bit. But maybe for us, for all of us, the best is yet to come. Maybe if we keep reading and we keep engaging in devotional service, we also will be able to surrender ourselves completely. But at this point in Bali Maharaj's life, he is shining in his position like a moon in the sky. He has a great reputation in all directions, in the three worlds. It feels like a perfect ending, like a fairy tale movie. You know, movies with perfect endings. What's next? Did he live happily ever after in this material world? No. This verse is not the last one in the chapter. We got tricked here. The next verse is the last verse in this chapter. What does that verse say? It says, thinking himself very satisfied, became very opulent and prosperous, and he began to enjoy the kingdom. When I was young, the weekend newspaper had a puzzle section. And I used to love, there was always a picture that looked perfectly normal. But if you looked at it carefully enough, there was usually a flaw. Like there would be a fish sticking out of the lady's purse, or someone would be missing an ear. So there are warnings in this last verse of this chapter. Bali Maharaj was thinking himself very satisfied. He became very opulent and prosperous, and began to enjoy the kingdom. What are the warnings that you see? Is anyone here? Has anyone picked up on the warnings, the danger signs that are in this verse? Being complacent. Thinking himself very satisfied. That's one. What's the other one? He became very opulent and prosperous. Yeah, I personally don't see that as a warning. It doesn't have to be a warning. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there's another warning. He began to enjoy the kingdom. Right. He didn't. It doesn't say that he began to serve the people of his kingdom. He began to enjoy the kingdom. Yes, Mataji? Yes, he began to enjoy the kingdom without Krishna, without service. Actually, Maharaj Bali is a great soul, and he'll ultimately deal with these two issues by the mercy of his spiritual master in Krishna. But there'll be another bumpy ride. I don't really see opulent and prosperous as being a problem. They can be, but in themselves they're not. Prahlad was a king, and he was the king of the demons after the demise of his father, but there was no problem. Dhruva Maharaj had no desires for opulence. He got his own planet, but there was no problem. The residents of Vrindavan were opulent and prosperous, but there is no problem. Srila Prabhupada was not afraid of prosperity either. We should note, though, that he was also not adverse to austerity. Actually, to prepare for this class, I thought this word is very interesting, prosperity, prosperous. So I did a search. You know, you can go online, Prabhupada's books, and do a search. So I researched prosperity in his books, conversations, lectures, and I started printing the references. There were so many pages that I stopped. I'm not wealthy enough to use that much paper. Doesn't mean that I may not be prosperous, though. So I started counting them. I gave up counting after about 400 because I received a phone call, a patient. I had to go back to another service. So obviously Srila Prabhupada understood that prosperity is an important topic. It's important to materialistic people. We know that. So it's a good platform from which to preach. It's not so important to one spiritually inclined, but prosperity is there. Just consider the last verse of Bhagavad Gita. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. So the residents of Vrindavan were prosperous. In the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the ground was muddied with milk from the cows. Imagine that. Imagine telling your children to be careful not to get their clothing muddy before they go to the kirtan party or whatever is going on because of the milk-soaked earth. Srila Prabhupada wrote in this regard, "This is Indian civilization. Yet how much people are suffering by giving up the Vedic way of life." So, what exactly is prosperity? The official definition, the online dictionary, is the state of being successful and having a lot of money. Actually, I really disagree with this definition. Because being successful, as we know, is relative. There's always someone more successful, and there's always someone who has more money. So is this what Srila Prabhupada wants? Is this what Krishna is talking about? There will be certainly opulence, victory. Is this really prosperity? I don't think so. So I went on to look at more definitions, and the synonyms were actually more appropriate. To thrive, to flourish, to flower, bloom, expand, improve. And then we get to the informal definitions, which really speak about the mentality of Kali Yuga, making the big time, living the life of Riley. This is seen as prosperity. And then I came to an interesting definition, which is listed as archaic. Archaic means, you know, it's so old, doesn't really have much meaning. It's actually a biblical saying. God has wonderfully prospered this nation. And then I thought, aha, now we're getting closer to what is real prosperity. It comes from God, first of all. So back to Srila Prabhupada. He spoke about prosperity so often, in so many different ways. It shows how deep was his understanding. It was far beyond cash flow, conception of prosperity. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 5, Verse 8, we have a wonderful description of the residents of Vrindavan and of prosperity. O King Parikshit, the coward men dressed very opulently with valuable ornaments and garments such as coats and turbans, decorated in this way and carrying various presentations in their hands, they approach the house of Nanda Maharaj. And in the purport, Prabhupada talks about this prosperity. When we consider the past condition of the agriculturalist in the village, we can see how opulent he was. Simply because of agricultural produce and protection of cows. At the present, however, agriculture having been neglected and cow protection given up, the agriculturalist is suffering pitiably and is dressed in a niggardly torn cloth. This is the distinction between the India of history and the India of the present day. By the atrocious activities of Ugra Karma, how we are killing the opportunity of human civilization. Prosperity is actually the concomitant. It goes with godly civilization. And then the paraphernalia for that godly civilization is described in the Bhagavatam. The Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu. And they are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. This is very wonderful. These are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu. We should meditate on that. Purport, in the Prabhupada says, we offer our obeisances to the personality of Godhead, and we say, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmana Itaya Cha, Jagatitaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. When Krishna comes to establish real perfection in the social order, he personally gives protection to the cows and the Brahmins. This is his first interest. This is his first interest, because without protection of the Brahmins and the cows, there can be no human civilization and no question of happy, peaceful life. Prosperity means happy, peaceful life, human civilization, and protection of Brahmins and cows. Of course, when Srila Prabhupada talks about cow protection, he means bulls also. In a room conversation with a labor leader from the UN, the subject turned to the protection of cows. And this labor leader, his name was Mr. Hennis, he thought that Prabhupada was simply talking about protecting cows. He said, this doesn't apply to bulls and male animals generally, does it? No, Prabhupada said, bullocks also. Cow means bullock. Oh, is it? Yes. Cow is feminine, bull is masculine. That's all. So Mr. Hennis finally got it. The whole bovine race that's protected, and not just the cows themselves. Maybe Srila Prabhupada was remembering this beautiful verse. While herding the very beautiful bulls, the Lord, who is the reservoir of all opulence and fortune, used to blow his flute, and thus he enlivened his faithful followers, the cowherd boys. So in reading Srimad Bhagavatam recently, I've become very much aware of how often Srila Prabhupada talks about cows and prosperity together, because Srimad Bhagavatam equates the two repeatedly. We just had recently the story of the churning of the milk ocean and how important is cow protection. Civilized men, Prabhupada writes, who follow the system of varnashram, especially those of the Vaishya class, who engage in agriculture and trade, must give protection to the cows. Unfortunately, because people in Kali Yuga are manda, all bad, and sumanda mataya, misled by false conceptions of life, they are killing cows in the thousands. As long as human society continues to allow cows to be regularly killed in slaughterhouses, there cannot be any question of peace and prosperity. So we can reverse that statement. When human society begins to protect, love, and take care of the cows, there will be peace and prosperity. So what does cow protection mean? I recently asked some children visiting the Goshala, what does it mean to protect cows? One little girl said, it means you get milk from them and ice cream. Another little boy said, it means you love them and they give you lots of milk. So one of these answers is good, but not perfect. The other misses the point. If one attends carefully to the many verses where Srila Prabhupada talks about bull and cow protection, he praises this miracle food that Gomata gives, but he repeatedly makes a statement. But repeatedly this statement is preceded by the instruction that milk will come in abundance if the cow is protected. When a cow gives a mere few liters a day, like in Kali Yuga now, it is not an indication of cow protection. A few liters a day is simply a biological reaction because of the nature of the cow body. Canto 2, 5, Prabhupada writes, mercantile class is also required to give protection to the cows in order to get sufficient milk. Otherwise, human society is disturbed. So, now we come to a very important verse. This is a verse from the punishment and reward of Kali. And in this verse, Srila Prabhupada actually tells us very specifically how cows should be taken care of. Do not let her be without her calf. Do not beat the bull and the cow. Gomata and Vrishaha, the bull, should not be in any way distressed. Prabhupada also says, the comfort of cows is more important than the comfort of Brahmins. She should be fed sumptuously with grass in the field, so she will not be weak. So, this very important verse bears repeating. Although the cow is beneficial because one can draw religious principles from her, she was now rendered poor and calfless. Her legs were being beaten by a sudra. There were tears in her eyes, and she was distressed and weak. She was hankering after some grass in the field. Prabhupada writes, the cow's calf not only is beautiful to look at, but also gives satisfaction to the cow, and so she delivers as much milk as possible. But in the Kali Yuga, the calves are separated from the cows as early as possible, for purposes which may not be mentioned in these pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. The cow stands with tears in her eyes. The Sudra milkman draws milk from the cow artificially. That doesn't always necessarily just mean machine. It means, artificial means that the calf doesn't get his quota. And when there is no milk, the cow is sent to be slaughtered. These greatly sinful acts are responsible for all the troubles in present society. People do not know what they are doing in the name of economic development. The influence of Kali will keep them in the darkness of ignorance. Despite all endeavors for peace and prosperity, they must try to see the cows and the bulls happy in all respects. Foolish people do not know how one earns happiness by making the cows and bulls happy. But it is a fact by the law of nature. I really strongly advise that we all read these verses from this chapter, Punishment and Reward of Kali. It's Bhagavatam 1:17, verses 1 to 16. So recently my husband and I were talking about bull and cow protection with a senior devotee, one of the leaders of ISKCON in India. Very suddenly he slammed his hand to his lap and said, "The problem, Mataji, is that we are too much wanting milk from the cow. We are blinded by this desire and cannot understand how to truly protect. We speak about it, but so far, ISKCON has not truly done cow protection." This is not a verbatim quote, but it is true to what he said. It's actually natural that we're blinded when we're attached. We become a little bit blind to what the need is. I remember when my son was a baby. I was a new mother. I had never had a child before, and babies cry. I didn't always know what to do when baby cried. And I was getting very, very annoyed. This particular day had been really bad. And I just put him in his crib, walked out, and I was just standing outside the door thinking, oh, so annoying. You know, my beautiful baby, but I'm so annoyed. And then I had a realization. You know why I'm annoyed? Because instead of thinking how I can serve this child, I'm thinking, what am I going to get? What am I going to get out of this relationship? And once I had that realization, I walked back in, and my whole attitude was changed. And you know what? He stopped crying so much. Because I wasn't focused on what I was going to get out of him, I was focused on what I was going to give him. So this is our challenge. This is the second half of Srila Prabhupada's mission, the establishment of Varnashram Dharma. Bull and cow protection is an essential part of this program. And I would just like to conclude with this inspiring quote from a very special devotee, His Holiness Ratnaswami. He said this actually in Mayapur in 2012, at a Gopastami lecture that he gave. The barometer of the spirituality of any society is the happiness of the cows. To the degree cows are genuinely happy, that is a testimony to the compassion of the people of that society. And for cows to be happy means they are protected, protected physically, protected emotionally, protected spiritually. Srila Prabhupada's standard of cow protection is not just that we don't kill them, not just that we let them live to their natural death. It means we create an environment around them where they are blissful actually loved and cared for. This is the very basis of the culture of Vrindavan. Thank you very much. We don't have much time, but are there any questions or comments? Good, I'll tell you about that picture. Oh, there is a question? About the picture. Okay. This picture, when I first came to Mayapur, I looked at this picture when I came to Bhagavatam class, and I thought, there's something really familiar about that picture, but I can't quite place where Prabhupada is. And then one day I was sitting in Bhagavatam class, and I was staring at the picture, and I know where Prabhupada is. He's in New Vrindavan. He's up at the old Vrindavan farm, which for many years was the Brahmachari ashram. So I didn't go there very often. That's my excuse for not knowing where Prabhupada was. And this particular picture was taken in 1976, the last time that Srila Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan. And there's a wonderful, amazing story that goes with a very severe look on Prabhupada's face. It was a custom that we had cookies for Prabhupada to distribute before the Bhagavatam class. So there were no cookies. The cookies had been left at Bahulaban 40 minuts down the road. So Radhanath Swami, who was the head pujari in charge of the farm, he was like, there are no cookies for Prabhupada. What do we do? What do we do? Finally, he thought, okay, we'll put all the maha from the day before on the deity's plates and we'll offer the maha to Srila Prabhupada. So he did that. He went up to the Vyasasan and Prabhupada's servant went, what's that? It's maha for Srila Prabhupada to distribute to the devotees. Prabhupada doesn't want maha. He wants cookies. Go away. So, not to be overcome, Radhanath Swami went around the other side. There was another chokidar on the other side of Srila Prabhupada. What's that? It's maha for Srila Prabhupada to distribute to the devotees. Prabhupada doesn't want maha, he wants cookies. Go away. But Prabhu, we have no cookies. Please. Okay, give it to him. So then the kirtan was going on, and Srila Prabhupada started eating, and he would take a bite, and then he would give to the devotees. And then he would give the bowl away. And then the next preparation, and the next preparation. And of course, the devotees were going nuts. They were just, this little temple room, the floor, I don't know how it survived. It was an old farmhouse. And, you didn't even have to jump up and down. The floor was doing it for you. And then at the very end were the gulab jamuns. And Prabhupada picked up a gulab jamun, and he bit into the gulab jamun, and the juice went flying. And the devotees went completely nuts. They were in total ecstasy, and then Prabhupada gave away that gulab jamun. And then finally, he gave away the tray and everything was gone. And Radhanath, he was in ecstasy. But then he thought, our deities don't have any more plates or bowls. What are we going to do? So then later on at Prasadam, he said to the devotees, I'm very sorry, but all the plates that Srila Prabhupada gave away, very humbly I have to ask you, this is the only opulence we have for our deities. Please, can you return them? And all the devotees returned all of the plates and bowls. So now it's time to go and see beautiful Radha Madhava. A question? We have to go. Pardon? It's time. It's 8:00. Radha Madhava. Radha Madhava. They look so beautiful with chandan. Yes.